Sorry? Heard about the... That's right. All right, then we'll say good morning. Good morning. So we dedicate our learning this morning for Shlema, for three children who require a refuah, for Elia Yisrael ben Tamar, ben Meir Shaul Yitzchak ben Devorah Yael, and Tehila Tzipora Bas Shira Leah. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, she beautiful neshamos will have a complete and enduring refuah. All right, so we'll say, so today's daf is Mem Dalid, so we left off on Mem Gimel Amud Beis. So just quickly, let's begin. So the Gemara says, Umigva Me'ema. So we're starting again, Mem Gimel Amud Beis, 43b, today is 44, on 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 15 lines up from the bottom. So remember again, just to reorient ourselves a little bit, so the Gemara, what the Mishnah is discussing the idea that the Chiyuv for Ksuva begins at Erisin. So now the question was the following, but yet we know that the Ksuva itself was not written until right before Nisuin. So the question the Gemara was asking now is Mikva Me'emas Gavya. When exactly is Ksuva collectible from? Now remember what the Gemara is ultimately asking is, let's say again, husband divorces wife, and husband does not have property readily available to go ahead and pay off the ksuva obligation. Now, the halacha is that a wife has the ability to go ahead and take and seize properties that were sold by the husband after the ksuva obligation was incurred in order to satisfy her debt. So the shaila now is, when could she seize properties as of? Can she seize properties as of the beginning of Erisin? Or does she have to dafka wait until the date of the ksuva is actually written, i.e. before Nisuin? So the Gemara says, "Umikva me'imas gavio amarafuna mana masai mina erisin v'tosefes mina Nisuin." So Rav Huna gives a very interesting answer. Rav Huna says it depends. Eker ksuva of 100 or 200, depending if she's a besula or a beula. So the eker ksuva of 100 or 200, that obligation stands from the beginning of Erisin. So already, technically speaking, she could go ahead and collect that money, technically, from property sold from the time of Erisin. However, vitosefes, any additional amounts which are included in the ksuva document itself, cannot be collected except from the time of Nisuin and on. Ravasi says, Echazev Echazem mina Nisuin. Ravasi says, no, both Iker Ksuva of 100 or 200 and Tosefes Ksuva can only be collected from Nisuin. I will say, when he says from Nisuin, what that means is from the time that the Ksuva was written. Take a look at Rashi for just a moment. It's the last two short lines in Rashi. Echad ze ve'echad ze mina Nisuin. Dehi gufa machla lishibuda kama. V'nisratza sabisman ha-kosuv b'shtar ha-ksuva. G'chol mafurash ba-bein be'ikar bein Tosefes. I will say, now, so Rav Huna's logic makes sense, because Rav Huna's going to say, since the Ksuva obligation begins at the beginning of Erisin, therefore she has the ability to collect from sold property from the beginning of Erisin. Tosefes is an additional amount written into the Ksuva. Therefore, she can only collect that from the time of the Ksuva itself. Rav Asi, on the other hand, says like this, that although technically speaking, the Ksuva obligation is incurred at the time of Erisin, when she goes ahead and she receives that document and accepts that document, she is mochel, sure, she is mocheles, on that first shibud, on that first lien on property from the time of Erisin, and agrees to only accept a lien on husband's property from the time of the document. So she's releasing, again, first lien, first shibud, and only accepting the shibud from the shtar. But did Rav Huna really say this? Va'it, Marbo said, interesting case. Hotzia alav shtei ksuvos. If a woman goes ahead and produces, right, her husband's going to divorce her, and she says, no problem, she takes out two ksuvos. Echad shel masayim ve'echad shel shlosh meos. One is for 200, one is for 300. What's the halacha? V'am Rav Huna, basa ligvos masayim gove mizman risham. Shlosh meos gove mizman shein abosayim. Now the assumption is that the 200 one is dated earlier than the 300 one. So Rav Huna says, no problem. She can go ahead and she could collect either one she wants, right? She could collect the 200 from the earlier date, or she could collect the 300 from the latter date. However, v'im isa Tigvi Masayim Mizman Rishon Umeya Mizman Sheni. But I don't understand. According to Rav Huna's logic, Rav Huna says that really the Iker Ksuva, that amount is incurred when? At the time of Erisin. So why don't you say she's entitled to 300, no matter what? Because, right, that's the higher level. But let her take 200 from the time of Erisin, meaning a lien on 200 from the time of Erisin, and the additional 100 is called Tosefes. That she'll be obligated to, or she'll be entitled to, from the date in the Ksuva. Now, boss, again, remember, when I'm using the word entitlement, what we're talking about over here is at what point in time would she be permitted to seize property from people who bought property from her husband. So what Rav Huna, what the Gemara is suggesting over here, according to Rav Huna, if she produces two documents, one for 200, one for 300, Rav Huna said, choose a ksuva. You can have whichever one you want, and the one for 200 is dated earlier than the one for 300. So we'll say, remember, again, sometimes a woman would want to go ahead and take, you say to yourself, well, what's the shaila? Of course, take the 300 one. Not necessarily. Because remember, if there were certain properties that she dafka wants, that were sold after the 200 ksuva was written. But before the 300 ksuva was written, if she goes with the 300, she may get more money, but she won't have the ability to seize the properties that she wants. As opposed to if she takes the 200, she might get less money, but she'll be able to seize the properties that she wants. The Gemara says, well, according to Rav Huna, I don't understand why I have to go through this. Why don't you say, like Rav Huna's Shita, that she's entitled to 200, 100 Iker Ksuva at the time of Erisin, which means that she could collect already from people, from purchasers, from the husband, at the time of Erisin, 200, and then 100 she'll have a lien on from the Iker Ksuva. So the Gemara says, well, I'll tell you better. Well, Tameich, why don't you just say, Tigvi Chamesh Meos Kulam, why don't you say that she should be entitled to go out and collect all 500, right? Both ksuvas, meaning if she has two ksuvas, maybe husband was a nice guy, wrote two ksuvas, masayim mizman rishon, utlas mizman sheni, right? Why don't you let her go out and collect the 200 from the earlier date and the 300 from the latter date? Ella, chamesh mios my time alogavio. So why can't she collect all 500 zuzin ksuva? Kevan de lo kasavla, tzavisi vaosifis lach. Tlas me'a amasayim. So the Gemara says, Sevisi va'osifi lach, tlas me'a amasayim. So the Gemara says like this, because you know why? Because it will say, if you look at the wording of these documents, the Gemara says, is that when he writes the first one for 200, or 300, or 200, and then he writes the second one for 300, in the one for 300, he doesn't write, and I'm adding on to you for your ksuva another 300. He does not mean the second ksuva to be an add-on to the first. So what does he mean? Hachi kamarla, imizman rishon gavias gavya masayim. What he's saying to her is, look, I'm giving you an option. If you want to take the earlier ksuva, so I'm giving you Iker Ksuva 200. If you're willing to take a later date for your lien, then what? I'm willing to increase your ksuva amount for 300. So he is giving her financial options, Rabbi Osei. He's giving her options. She can go ahead. And again, remember, he might be interested in being able to sell off certain property. So for him, it may be worth it to pay more in a ksuva payment, but yet have unrestricted ability to sell his property in between those two dates.
He doesn't have the money to pay her in cash, then she can go.
That is correct. If he has assets, then she may not go and seize sold assets. That is correct. Top of Mem Dalet. Hachanami, so to over here. Hainu time of Delogavia, Midelokas of Law, Osifis Lach Mea Amasayim. So therefore what? Because again, Rabosai, same thing over here in this case, the two ksuvas. Because he did not write, I'm going and adding on to an additional 100 over the 200 that I promised you previously. Achule achilse l'shibuda kamo. If she chooses to accept the first ksuva, then what? Or I should say it differently. If she chooses to accept the second ksuva, then by definition, she is releasing her rights on the first ksuva. So Rabosai, what's coming out over here is something very interesting. That you could have these situations where a husband would write two ksuvas, but you could have two different cases of two ksuvas. You could have a case of two ksuvas where a husband writes the first ksuva and then writes a second one, but the point of the second one is to add on to the first. If that is indeed true, the verbiage of the second ksuva must indicate that it is an add-on to the first. If there's no such verbiage within the second ksuva document, then it is clear that what is the husband doing? It's two ksuvas, and he is giving her options. Perhaps you could take a smaller amount with an earlier lien, or a larger amount with a latter lien, which means a later lien, which means if she goes ahead and she takes the one, the larger amount, the 300 with the later lien, that means ultimately, again, although technically speaking, she may have been entitled to a lien for a ksuva from the time of Erusin, by accepting second ksuva right before Nisuin, she is releasing the first lien. So Amar Mar, I baya b'hai gavyo. So Mar says the truth is, she has the right to go ahead and take either ksuva, whichever one she wants. Lema pligi Rav Nachman. So say that this argues on Rav Nachman. Look at Rashi Rabbo say, Amar Mar, bless you. Adrav Hunakai, the Amar imbasa ligvos masayim. So remember, so Mar seems to be saying the same thing as Rav Huna, where Rav Huna said, if she wants to collect the one with 200, she could do the one for 200. She wants to collect the one for 300, she could do the one with 300. Either one she wants. This seems to argue on Rav Nachman. Dam Rav Nachman, shnei shtaros hayotzin bezeh achazeh. If you have two shtaros, now the Rosh say this in general, this is not ksuva. In fact, if you look at Rashi, he says, shnei shtaros, shal sada achas, shal mecha umatana, v'kasvan Ruvain l'shimen be'echar v'nisa v'echar b'tzion. Rosh say, listen to this. So let's say Ruvain is selling Shimon a piece of land, but Ruvain writes two shtaros. He writes two documents. So what's the halacha? We'll see what it means in just a moment. Bital sheni es harishon. So Rav Nachman says that the second document, by definition, voids the first. Okay, so what's the pshat? So the Gemara says, lav mi itmar Allah. So we'll say, so now what we seem to have over here is a machlokes between Rav Nachman on one hand and Rav Huna and Mar on the other hand. Why? Because the Maisa, again, Rav Huna and Mar are saying that if there are two shtaros, you have the ability to choose which one you want to use. But Rav Nachman seems to say that second shtar always negates the existence of the first. So the Gemara says, but lav mi itmar Allah, did we not say about this? Amar Rav Papa, Umod Rav Nachman agrees, the Osif Bey Dikla, Litosef Es Kasve. So we'll say Rav Nachman qualified this. Rav Nachman said, well, it depends. What does the second star look like? If the second star is adding something on to the first, then what? Then the second one is not mevatel the first. Rather, what is the second one doing? It's supplementing the first. So meaning, literally, if it just adds in even one palm tree, a deka, one palm tree, right? Rav Nachman, there's a chilik between a dekel and a tamar. Right, the chilik between, Yanki, what's the chilik? Male and female. Very good. People don't know this. Very important fact. There are male trees and female palm trees. Very, very important to sow. I don't know what you could possibly do that information, except if you want to turn Eretz Yisrael, you can go ahead and say that you know that. And the Gemara says the following. So the Gemara says, Ha-chanami, ha-osif lamidi. So too over here, why don't you say that lamaisa, you're going ahead and you're adding on something in the second shtar as well? To which the Gemara says, Hachanami, ha-osif lamidi. So gufa, Amar Rav Nachman. So we'll say now the Gemara is going to go back and analyze this statement. Shnei shtaros hayotzin b'zeh achar zeh, bital sheni es harishon. Yet, so Rav Nachman says, if you have two shtaros, so we'll say it's not ksuva now. This is mecher. You're going ahead and Reuven is selling Shem in the field and he has two shtaros. So we'll see what the two shtaros are in just a moment. So the second one negates the first. Amar Papa, Modi Rav Nachman, di osif beidikla, litosef es kasve. We just said before, but yet Rav Nachman agrees that if the second one adds something to the first, i.e., that let's say the second one adds an additional palm tree, that the second one doesn't negate the first, but amplifies or supplements the first. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara now wants to understand, what's the case of two shtaros? What are you writing here exactly? Pshita rishon b'mechar v'sheni b'matana. Rabbi says, listen to this. Listen, this is so interesting. I understand like this. So if the first document that Reuven writes to Shimon is what's called a shtar mecher, a sale, a document of sale, right? The shtar that indicates that Reuven's selling the shtar to selling the land to Shimon. And then he writes in a second document, Rat Rabosai, he writes in a second document that he's gifting the property to Shimon. Now let's be clear. Now the transaction for sale already occurred, but he's writing another document that says, not only am I giving it to you, but Torah's sale, I'm giving it to you, Bitoras Matana. So I understand why that second shtar is beneficial as well. Liyafos kochohu dikasivle. Now I will say, now why would Reuven write a shtar Matana for Shimon? if Reuven already sold the land to Shimon, this is quite interesting. Mishum, because again, writing the gift document will actually bolster Shimon's control over the property. Why? Liyafos kochohu. It's to bolster his claim. The cause of le mishum dina de bar metzra. Listen to this. This is really fascinating. Dina de bar metzra is the following. The halacha is, if you're selling property, if I'm selling a field, I must give my neighbors the right of first refusal. Hey, now again, Abbas, I remember, that's only assuming my neighbors want to pay the full price. But I have to give my neighbors the right of a first refusal. Only if they go ahead and don't want to buy it, then lemaisa, I have the right to sell somebody else. Abbas, you should know that this halacha sounds strange to us because, like, you know, somebody's selling their house next door to me. So, you know, what I want to be able to buy. So I'll tell you where this comes up all the time. This comes up very often in Eretz Yisrael with sales of apartments. So because, especially in certain neighborhoods where apartments are at a premium, so there's an interesting idea about if you're selling your apartment that you're supposed to ask your neighbor first if they want to buy it. Now, remember, you don't have to discount it. I'm entitled to pay it for full market value or even above market if I want to. And if my neighbor doesn't want to pay that amount, I don't have to reduce it, but the halacha is you have to offer it to your neighbor for right of first refusal. Now, the logic behind that is the following. Because for my neighbor, the ability to have two adjoining parcels of land is a unique opportunity, right? Pretty much, it can only happen in, depending on where you're situated, at most, you know, for three ways, right? Two people on your side, one person in the back of you, assuming you're not landlocked. So therefore, again, because this represents a unique opportunity, therefore, halach lemaisa, the neighbor has to give, the one who's selling has to give his neighbor right of first refusal. However, again, if you're not a neighbor, but you're just some purchaser, so the reality is if you don't get this property, you'll get another property. However, again, that is only true if the prospective seller has the, excuse me, buyer has the ability to get another property like this. But if somebody's giving me something for free, if somebody's giving me a matana, then lemaisa, this is a unique, non-replicable. It's not replicable, right? Right possibility. And therefore, again, Dina de Bar Metzra does not apply. Bar Metzra literally means the person who borders on the land. Therefore, I will say, in this case, something quite interesting. So Reuven sells the field to Shimon, but he knows that there might be a possibility. The neighbors might be upset. So what does he do? He also gifts it to him. Now, the Gemara in Bava Metzia discusses what exactly the impact of a gift is after you've already gone ahead and sold it. We're not going to get into that right now. But Lamaisa, at the end of the day, such a document does bolster the claim of the individual who bought it. The Chol Shekein, Rishon B'matana V'Shem Yamecha. And I will say, all the more so what? All the more so where the first document was a Matana document, and the second one was a Mecher, the second one was a sale document. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is like this, that if the first one was a sale document and the second one was a gift document, those two, the second one does not negate the first. Why? Because those documents are accomplishing two different things. The sale document was there to transact the sale. The gift document is there to go ahead and give me the koach over the bar metzra, over the neighbor. Because again, it's a gift, it's unique, and therefore the seller had no obligation to go ahead and just give it, try to sell it, because he's gifting it away. Fine. I also understand if the first shtar is a matana and the second shtar is a mechera sale one. Why? Amrina mishum dina de balchov hu de kasavik. Russell, listen to this. If you get something as a gift, what happens if, now let's say Reuven gives me a gift, and then a month later one of Reuven's creditors comes along and seizes the property in satisfaction of a debt that Reuven had to him. What's my recourse? Nothing, because I got a gift, right? You don't have recourse for a gift. If somebody gives you a gift and then it gets seized by the gift giver's creditors, right? You don't have any recourse against the gift giver. You got a gift, you lost the gift. Easy come, easy go. However, again, I'll say, listen to this. If Reuven gives me a gift and he gives me a shtar matana, and then afterwards he writes a shtar mecher, he writes it up as a sale. Oh, That is a benefit to me. Why? Because now, since it's a sale, even though no money has exchanged hands, but if he writes it up, if he frames it as a sale, that means if that property is then seized by one of Reuven's creditors, what do I have the ability to do? I have the ability to go back to Reuven and demand that he make me whole. So the Gemara is just giving examples over here of where you'd have two shtaros, but the two shtaros would not, the second shtar would not void the first, because the second one is coming to go ahead and somehow cover another base or create another legal reality. Either if the first shtar is a shtar mecher, first is a sale, second is a matana, having a gift document is beneficial to me because it allows me to go ahead and combat the claims of the neighbor who says that he should have been given first rights in the property. If the first shtar is a shtar mecher, and then the owner of the property, the former owner of the property, also gives me a shtar matana. Excuse me, just the opposite. If first Reuven gifts it to me, so and then he gives me a shtar mecher, a document that says that he sold it to me. That's helpful because now, for some reason, if it's ever seized in satisfaction of Reuven's debts, I have the ability to go back to Reuven and demand that he make me whole. Ella. But I will say, if let's say, again, Reuven's selling Shimon land, and he wrote two gift documents or two sale documents, then in that case, Bital Sheni Esarisham. Then I will say, in that case, ultimately, again, the second document voids the first. In other words, I will say, when there are two of the same document, so there is no reason, there is no logical reason why we need that second one. By definition, the second one voids the first. My time, now what's the reason for that? My time, Rafram Amar, Amar Aduye Odile. Because say Rabosai, the fact that Reuven went ahead and had the second document drawn up, that's tantamount to what? Odile Rashi says, Balashtar Sharishon Mzuyuf Haya, Venisratza ala acher ligvos mizman sheni. So we'll say if the seller goes out of his way to write up a second document that indicates that what? The first one was forged. The first one was forged, or the first one had something problematic about it. Literally, Oduye, he admits that it was forged, and therefore you have to write the second document. That's Rafram. Ravacha Amar, Achuli Achle Lishibude. Ravacha, on the hand, says, no, really what's happening over here is that the owner of the land is asking the purchaser slash recipient to go ahead and be mochel the shibud, be mochel the lien as of the first date, and accept a later lien as of the second date in the document. So my benai, what's the practical difference between these two answers? So I'll tell you what the difference is. Oruye sahadi. So nafkamina monabosai is, if we say that when you have two shtaros, the first one is forged, so you know what that means? That means the people that signed on that first document, their credibility is now called into question. Furthermore, and Abba said that's only true if you say the first one is forged. If you say that just in general, the seller slash grantor wants to go ahead and move the lien date, that would not reflect poorly on the witnesses. Next, nafkamina, l'shalume peri, to go ahead and pay back any produce consumed. Abba say, see, according to Rafram, if when you write the second shtar, it turns out that the first one was forged, that means if Shimon was enjoying the payros of the property between the date of the first shtar and the second shtar, he must reimburse the owner of the land for produce consumed between those dates. And lastly, most important, always comes down to this, taska, taxes, right? Everything comes back to taxes. Who pays real estate tax during the times between the date of the first shtar and the second shtar? If you hold like Rafram that the first shtar is forged, and the only real shtar ultimately, again, is the second one, then it turns out that the owner of the land would be responsible for property taxes in between the dates of the two shtaros. My haviyala. So we'll say, what is the bottom line? Or I should say, my haviyala diksuva. So what is the bottom line with diksuva? And I was about to say, what we're asking over here is, remember how this whole thing got started? How did we get into this whole mess, right? How did this whole thing get started? This got started because we're trying to figure out, when does the obligation for ksuva actually occur, right? Meaning, what is it at the time of Erisin, or is it at the time of Nisu? And I also remember, this is an important question, because really what we're asking is, from what point in time does a wife have a lien against her husband's property for satisfaction of the ksuva debt? So what is the halacha? Tashma dam Rav Yehuda Meshmua Mishum Rav Elazar Rav Shimon Mona Masai Mina Erisin V'tosefes Mina Nisuin. So what's Rav Elazar and Rav Shimon? That for the Iker ksuva of 100 or 200, that lien begins at the time of Erisin, but any additional amounts that we call Tosefes is from Nisuin. I must say, remember, when we see Nisuin means from the time of the writing of the ksuva. V'cham say no, Echadzeh V'Echadzeh Mina Nisuin. both the lien for Iker Ksuva as well as Tosefes Ksuva is from the son from the Ksuva, the Hilchasa, and what is the halacha? Echad zeh v'echad zeh min hanisuin. Both ultimately, again, both the Iker Ksuva as well as Tosefes Ksuva, though obligation, or I should say the lien, only occurs from the time that the Ksuva is written from Nisuin. I will say that is indeed how the Shulchan Aruch paskins. So Shulchan Aruch and Evan Ezra Hilchos Kiddushin, Simen Nun He Sif Vav, right, the halacha is Shelo Tiknu La Iker Ksuva Ad Shetinase O Ad Sheyichtov. That the halacha is a Moshe. The wording of the Shulchan Aruch is actually something very interesting. The wording of the Shulchan Aruch is that the obligation of her Ksuva, really what I mean is the lien that she has against this property, only occurs either at the time of Nisuin. So what it sounds like is, if for some reason it didn't write the Ksuva at Nisuin, Nisuin itself creates the lien even in the absence of a Ksuva, or a Ksuva creates a lien even in the absence of Nisuin. So for example, today, what do? We write a Ksuva before Nisuin, except, you know, Mineg Yushalayim is that they go ahead and they write the Ksuva underneath the Chuppah itself. So as I say, Yushalayim, it's not really done. So let's say what we do today is we go ahead and we write the Ksuva before the Nisuin. So therefore the obligation or the lien against the husband's property begins from the date in the Ksuva, which means although you're supposed to have the Chuppah on the same date as recorded in the Ksuva, if for some reason it's two different calendrical days, Lemaisa, again, the Shibud, the lien, begins the time of the Ksuva. And even if for some reason there was no Ksuva, then the lien would begin when? At the time of Nisuin. But we pass in Halacha L'maaseh that no lien begins at the time of Erusin. For really, what we're really passing is that there's no real obligation for Ksuva at the time of Erusin yet. So Halacha L'maaseh, the lien only begins either at the date of the Ksuva or at the time of Nisuin. Says the Mishnah, Hagiorish Neskaira Bita Ima V'Zinsa. So we'll say, if you have a following situation, you have a woman who converted, and her daughter converted with her. So what happens? And now the girl, the convert girl, went ahead and the Yores was Mizana. And I will say, now what we're talking about over here, Rashi says, Be'erusin v'hinara. We're not talking about the case of Nara Murasa, which is the case of Osef, where a man marries a woman. It turns out that she wasn't the Basula. And witnesses come forward to testify about the fact that she committed adultery during Erusin. That's why she's not a basula. She was with another man during Erusin. So we're both saying, normally the halacha is that when you have a situation like this of Nara Murasa, she is killed with skila. She's killed with stoning. However, the Gemara says over here that if she's a giores, and for reasons we will discuss, she is killed, harizu b'chenek. She is killed with chenek, with strangulation. And furthermore, ein la pesach beisav. Further again, we'll say the halach, the Torah says that you're supposed to stone her at the entrance of her father's home. So that obligation does not exist over here, remember, because she is a giores. Therefore, again, technically, on a halachic level, she doesn't have a relationship to her biological father. So she's not stoned at the entrance way to her father's home. Velo mea sela. Now, the halacha is that if it turns out that the husband was lying and she really was a basula, so the halacha is he gets two things. He gets lashes and he's fined 100 sela. So if he goes ahead and he says this about his wife who is a giores, so there is no fine and there are no lashes. Again, we'll discuss why that is. If ever again, I will say this girl, she was conceived before her mother converted, but her mother converted during pregnancy, and so she was born she was born to a Jewish mother. So she, meaning she was conceived by a non-Jewish mother, but born to a Jewish mother. So what does the halacha say? In the same case, these are all the same cases. She then committed adultery during Erusin. She had Erusin to a Jewish man, obviously she's a Jewish girl, and then she went ahead and she had adultery. Harizu biskila. So in this case, she is stoned. She is stoned for this transgression. However, the ein lalo pesachav, but she is not stoned at the entranceway of her father's home. Because we both say again, because lemaisa, her mother became pregnant while she was still not Jewish, while the mother was not Jewish. Therefore, lemaisa, again, there is no direct relationship to her father. So therefore, there's no stoning at the entranceway of her father's home. Velo mea sela, and furthermore, if it turns out that the husband's lying, he is not fined the 100 sela. The Gemara is going to explain why each of these cases are so. If, however, she was conceived by a Jewish mother and born to a Jewish mother, she's like a regular Jewish woman for all matters. We'll say she has a father, but let's say, again, there's no entranceway to her father's home. Her father doesn't have a home. Whatever the situation is, so she has a father, but there's no father's home, or yesh la pesach beisav ein laav, or she has her father's home, but her father's not here. Her father died. Hare zu biskila. So she is stoned, and we don't dafka do it in front of the father's home. Lo ne'emar pesach beisav el la mitzvah, because ultimately, again, the idea when the Torah says that you're supposed to stone her by the entrance of her father's home, that was said, that's the command the Torah gave, but that's not what we call the ikuva. That doesn't mean it has to be that way. The punishment is carried out even if for some reason there is not a father's home. Says the Gemara. Amud Beis. Menahani Mili, where do we know this? I will say now, the Gemara is focusing on one specific case. If you look at Rashi, Menahani Mili, Shorasa Shalo Bikdusha, Veleidasa Bikdusha Biskila. How do we know in the case, Rabbi Osai, of where she was conceived by a non-Jewish mother, but ultimately born to a Jewish mother? How do we know that if she committed adultery during Erisin, that she is stoned? So the Gemara says, Amrei Shlakish Tamakra, because the Pasuk says, Umesa. Because the Pasuk says, and she shall die. Lerabos horasa shalo bikdusha v'leidasa bikdusha. That comes to include a woman who was conceived before her mother was Jewish, but was ultimately born to a Jewish mother. And Rabbi Osai, now what the Gemara is pointing out over here, the Pasuk says the following. Votzia es ha-na'ara al pesach beisaviha. They will take the girl. Remember, this is about the girl who committed adultery during Erisin, to the entrance of her father's home. Uskalua anshe ira ba'avanim vamesa. And they will stone her and she will die. And Rabbi Osai, obviously the point of stoning is to kill her. That word vamesa is an extra word. So the Gemara says that Vamesa is coming to include an additional case of a girl who was conceived by a non-Jewish mother, but was birthed by a Jewish mother, a mother converted during pregnancy, that she is still included in the punishment of Skila. Iochi milka nami nilke umea sela nami l'shan. I don't understand. So if that's the case, that she is punished with skila, then what? Then lemaisa again, he should also be subject to the same punishments. So therefore, if it turns out that he's lying about her, he should get the lashes and he should have to pay the 100 sela. I mean, you want to say, man of shach, either if she's included in the parasha of Nara Murasa, then what? Then the same way she's going to get the punishment of skila, he should get his punishments. And if he's not going to get his punishments, then she shouldn't get skila. To which the Gemara says, Umesa, Lamisa Nisrab Savalo Liknas. No, because it only comes to include her in the death penalty, but doesn't come to include him in his particular kenosis, in his particular penalties. I ve'ema l'rabos, horasa v'leidasa b'kdusha. Maybe say that Umesa comes to include a girl who was conceived and birthed by a Jewish mother. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? Hahi Yisraelis ma'al yasahi. You don't need a pasuk to include her. She's a Yisraelis, right? That's a full-fledged Jewess. If someone was conceived by a Jewish mother and born to a Jewish mother, that's a full-fledged Jewess. The Ema L'Rabos, Horasa V'Leidasa Shela B'Kedusha. I, maybe it comes to include a girl who what? Who was conceived and birthed by a non-Jewish mother and subsequently converted, meaning a non-Jewish girl who was born and then subsequently converted. Im Kain B'Yisrael, my ahanila. If that's the case, Rabbi Osai, then what? Remember, the pasuk says ki asasa nevala biYisrael, which indicates to us that this girl did something despicable in Yisrael, which indicates that lamaisa she has to be included in the context of Yisrael. If that's the case, that she, so the Gemara's understanding is something very interesting, that Yisrael dafka means that she's a natural born Jewess. If she was a convert, then by definition, again, she is excluded from this parsha. Now, boss, I want to be clear. When we say that she's excluded from this parsha, she's obviously held accountable if she commits adultery during Eris, and she's a Jewish woman. The difference is that whereas for the Nara Murasa, her punishment is Skila, the convert will get Chenek, like we saw in the Mishnah, and not Skila. So the Gemara says, Maya Hanilei. So how does this help? Amarav Yossi Bar Chanina. So the Gemara says, excuse me, I'm sorry. We saw Maya Hanilei. Amarav Yossi Bar Chanina. Hamotzi Shimra Ali Yisoma. So we'll say, understand what we've established until now. So we've established is like this, that Lemaisa, if she is, Umesa the extraordinary mesa comes to include the case of a girl who was conceived by a non-Jewish mother, but ultimately, again, was birthed to a Jewish mother, that she is included in the parasha of Na'ara Mura, so that if she commits adultery during Erusin, she gets skila. Now, her husband is excluded from his kenasos, from his fines, based on a technicality. So we have essentially three categories of women so far. We have Horasa v'leidasa b'kedusha, if she was conceived and birthed by a Jewish mother, full Jewish, nothing to it, right? Skila for adultery during Erusin. That's case number one. Case number two, Horasa shelo b'kedusha leidasa b'kedusha, conceived by a non-Jewish mother, birthed by a Jewish mother, she's included in skila, she gets skila, but her husband is exempt from his penalties if he lies. And case number three is Horasa v'leidasa b'kedusha, essentially born to a non-Jewish mother, she subsequently converts, she's not subject to skila at all. If she commits adultery during Erusin, she gets chenek, and it goes without saying that what? That husband himself is exempt from his penalties as well. So the Gemara says, now we're going to go through a couple of other cases. I'm Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina. Hamotzi Shemra Ali Yisoma Pat. Let's say a man marries a Yisoma. A man marries a woman without parents. By the way, you know that Yisoma in Gemara doesn't have to be without parents. Yisoma could also just mean without a father. And we'll see that. But let's assume right now she's a Yisoma. She's an orphan. So what's that? Lacha Pater, if he's Motzi Laz, if he goes in and he says that she wasn't a Basula, and then it turns out that what she was, he is Pater from the fines, from the 100 Sela, and from the lashes. Why? Shene Emar, V'nosnu La'avian Ara, because the Pasuk says that if the husband lies about the Basula status of his wife, what does he have to do? He has to pay the money to the father of the girl, which we can infer what? Prat Lazu She'in La'av. I could infer from this that what? That if the girl doesn't have a father, i.e. she's an orphan, then l'maisa, the husband is exempt from paying the fine. Maser Yossi Bar Avin, Rav Yossi Bar Avin raises a kasha, v'itim Rav Yossi Bar Zevida, v'im ma'ein, yima'ein aviha. So remember, the pasuk says, Rav Yossi, this is by the mefate. So by the seducer, the halacha is that halacha l'maisa, if the father does not want his daughter to marry this girl, then she doesn't have to marry him. So the Gemara says, L'rabos Yisoma L'knas. This comes to include what? This comes to include that even a girl who does not have a father is still entitled to the knas of the mefata of being seduced. Divi Rabbi Yossi Aglili. And Rabbi Yossi Aglili, these are the words of Rabbi Yossi Aglili. So I'll say, so what do you see from here? You see from here that l'maisa, even though the pasuk says by mifata aviha, her father, so it sounds like when do you get the kenas? Only if she has a father. So yet we see that even when it says father, it doesn't mean to limit it to a case where she has a father. But even if she doesn't have a father, she still gets the kenas. So why don't you say the same thing over here? That by the case of where the by the case of the motzi las, motzi shemra, where he is saying that his wife wasn't a basula and she is a basula, even if she doesn't have a father, he should still have to pay the kenas. So who most of love whom afarkla? He raised the question. He answers it. Beba'aleha. The achakach nis yasma, that what's the case of? I'll say the case over here is where at the time of the marriage, she did have a father. But it was only after the bia, then she became a yavama. Rashi says, uli olam, avia na'ara lemi'uti yasoma, bein biknas, bein ba'otza shema. Well, at the end of the day, the Gemara says, in reality, if she was orphaned from the time of the beginning of the marriage, then enochinami, there would not be an obligation to pay the knas of mefata, nor would there be an obligation to pay the knas of motzi shemra. But also remember, motzi shemra refers to the case of where a man says that his wife was not a basula, but it turns out that she was a basula. That's called motzi shemra. So it turns out that if the father was not alive at the wedding for either of those cases, there would be no obligation of knas. But if at the time of the bia the father was alive and he died subsequently, then halacha l'maisa, he would be obligated to pay the knas, even though what? The father is not alive at the time of the actual payment. So the Gemara says, Rava, Amar Rava says, Chayiv. Rava says, no, you're chayiv to pay, even if the father is not alive at all. Rashi says, Hamotzi Shemra Ali Yisoma. Even if she was a Yisoma from the beginning of the wedding, you're still, from the beginning of the marriage, you're still obligated to go ahead and pay the fine. So the Gemara says, Mimai, where do we know this from? Midetani, Ami Besulas Yisra, Velo Besulas Gerim. Remember, again, the halacha is that you are only chayiv for Motzi Shemra, for a Besulas Yisra, right? And not for Besulas Girim. Well, so we said this before already. If the girl is a convert, even if she's a Besula, it's like, for example, so if a girl converts prior to the age of 3, we assume that she is a Besula. So if you're Motzi Laz on Besulas Girim, there is no halacha Motzi Shemra. I amrit bishlama ki agavna se ibi yisra mechayiv hainu de itzrich kralam ute gerim. So we'll say, if you say that a Jewess who is a yisoma gets the knasa moti shemra, then I understand the comparison between the case of the Jewess to the case of the giyores. Because what doesn't the giyores have in a halachic sense? She doesn't have a father either. So then what you're saying is, although the Giyores is, so to speak, a Yisoma, and therefore she doesn't get the Knas, but a Yisraelis Yisoma does get the Knas. But if you want to say that a girl who is a Yisoma doesn't get the Knas for Moti Shemra, has to be Yisrael Pater, the Gerimi boy. So if a Jewish girl without a father is not going to get the Knas, of course it goes without saying that what? That a Gioris, who of course doesn't have a father, is not going to get the Knas. Reishlag, so therefore again, it has to be that what? It has to be that Lemaisak, at least according to this opinion, according to Pigli Mando Amar, that in fact Yisoma would be entitled to the Knas. So Amar Reish Lakish says the following. Reish Lakish says, Hamoti Shemra ala Kitana, if one goes out and is Moti Shemra on a Kitana, on a minor girl, Pater. So I say this would be a case of where he went ahead and he married a Kitana, and then he claims that she wasn't a Basula, so he's Pater. Why? Shene Emar, Vinasnu La'avyan Na'ara. Because the Pasuk says that if he's Moti Shemra on her, he shall give the money to the father of the Na'ara. Na'ara male diber hakosov. So we'll say, here's what's interesting, is the Lashon of the Pasuk is, it writes the word na'ara male. Molly, the Rebbe say, now here's interesting. Now normally, very often in the Torah, when the word na'ara is written, it's written nun ayin resh, without a hey. Here in this particular section, it's written with a hey. That's called Molly. It's written complete. So the Gemara says like this. The Gemara says, that Reish Lakish says, that if you go ahead and you're Moti Shemra on a Kitana, you have to, you're Potter. Why? Because since the Torah writes Na'ara, Molly, with the complete hey, indicates to us what? That it's only a Na'ara and no one else. So Lemaise, if he's Moti Shemra on a Kitana, he doesn't have to pay the fine. So the Gemara says, Maskif la Rav Acha bar Abba. So Rav Acha bar is the cash. So the reason you want to say that it only applies to a na'ara, not to a kitana, is because it says hanara complete with a hey. Ha lav hachi. But were it not for this, that na'ara is written complete. So hava amina afila kitana. I would have thought that it applies even to a kitana. But yet the pasuk says, "Vim emes haya hadavar azeh lo nimtzu b'sulu na'ara votziu es hanara al pesach beisavia uskaluha." Uktana lav bas onshinhi. They both say, now the Gemara says something different. The Gemara says that obviously this case is only talking about a na'ara. How do we know that? Because Lamayin Segen Abosei HaTorah says that if it turns out that the husband was telling the truth and she did commit adultery, then what? Then Allah Lamayin says she's killed. Now Abbas, he can only be killed if what? If you have the capacity as an adult. So if she's a katana, this whole halacha doesn't apply to her. So why are we even bringing this up? Ela kan na'ara. So we'll say, obviously, this case of Moti Shemra only applies to a na'ara. That's obvious. Meaning, we'll say, forget about how the word is written. Just from the halacha itself, it's clear that it only applies to a na'ara because it requires das. You can only be executed for something if you have das. So rather, the Gemara is like this. What's very interesting? Ela kan na'ara. So listen to this. So rather what you have to say is like this. What we learn out from this sugya, we'll say na'ara is written mali with a hey, which tells us that this case only applies to na'ara. Only to na'ara. But you know what we do learn out? That any other time the Torah writes the word na'ara, normally it's deficient, nun ayin resh, what does that teach us? That teaches us afilu kitana b'mashma. That teaches us, Rabbi said, that even sometimes when the Torah says na'ara, it does not mean to limit its halacha to na'ara, rather it comes to even include kitana. So we'll stop over here for today. So again, remember, what we emerge with, what we've seen already, is we're now delving into the halachas of Motzi Shemra, a man who goes ahead and accuses his wife of not being a basula at the time of the wedding. We've now established the three categories of women, which do fit into this category, which don't fit into this category. What we've also seen is that Lamaisa, if you go ahead and you are Motzi Shemra on a Kitana, you are Pater. You are pater. But for why? Why is that? Not simply because it says Nara, but for a different reason, because the entire parsha of Motzi Shemra only applies to a Nara. How do we know that? We know that because, again, there's a punishment for her having committed adultery. That could only apply to a Nara, can't apply to a Ketana. Therefore, if a man is Motzi Shemra on his wife who's a Ketana, he is pater from the Knas and pater from the lashes if it turns out that he has been lying. All right, we'll pick up Emir Hashem tomorrow morning. Special mazel tov to Ari Lerner, Emir Tzah Hashem. Tonight, B'shah Tov Matzlachas will be marrying off his daughter. She'll be zochet to never be involved in any of these cases that we've learned, you know, over the crazy. We only learn like the ridiculous cases. You know, there are Baruch Hashem normal cases of getting married. Emir Tzah Hashem, all should occur B'shah Tov U'Matzlachas. She'll be zochet, Emir Tzah Hashem, to walk your daughter down to the chuppah. B'shah Tov U'Matzlachas. And you should be zochet, Emir Tzah Hashem, to be able to see beautiful Dori Doros of Nachos, of proper Yiddish Nachos, to see grandchildren and great grandchildren continue to walk in the way of Yaakov Saba Kadisha. Mazel tov.
Question. So, before.